On today's College Football Inquirer, we unpack the ass-whooping that Bill Belichick and the North Carolina Tar Heels endured at the hands of the TCU Horned Frogs. We also talk Miami Notre Dame. Ross Dellinger was on the scene. Is the U back? Plus, Ross's poll made everybody mad. The AP poll comes out. Will it make everyone equally mad? We'll talk about it all on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer, and just a reminder, you can watch us, our show, our beautiful faces, on the Yahoo Sports Network. That's Yahoo's first ever streaming TV channel. It is available on most leading FAST services. That's free ad-supported television. So you turn on your smart TV, you look at your home screen, you see the Yahoo Sports Network, you click on it, and there is Stephen Godfrey staring right back at you. Who wouldn't love that?
Hi, Mom.
Plus, you've got the Yahoo Sports Daily. I'm going on that show on Wednesday with Caroline and Jason Fitz. You've got Ariel Helwani's MMA show. Got it all. So watch it on your TV. Also, if you want to watch it 24/7 on your devices, yahoosports.tv. You can catch all the shows on demand anytime, including this here College Football Inquirer. Gentlemen, You probably wanted to watch a Yahoo Sports Network show sometime around, the 14-minute mark of the third quarter of the TCU-North Carolina game, because it was long over by that point.
Or? I don't know. No. Godfrey seemed to be enjoying it thoroughly. He wanted more blowout.
No offense to the fine Yahoo Sports Network FAST programming. It's all wonderful. Shout out to all of our colleagues. But I enjoyed every second of that last night for myriad reasons, but I want to set the table as professionally as possible. Ran out of breath because I'm so overjoyed. We spent the last show trying to rationalize back to that overreacting week one audience about that Arch Manning was overhyped. Mm. Do you guys remember that? It was so overhyped because they lost by one possession on the road to the defending national champions to a really good football team. Texas still very much in the position for a playoff. Guy's got the most famous last name in the history of throwing a football forward, right? Two unks won the Super Bowl multiple times. And we in the media were demonized for overplaying a guy who, by the way, even if he didn't have that last name, he's just a starting quarterback on a really good Texas team that was preseason number one in a lot of polls. I would posit, my friends, I'm waving a pen already. The real overhyping came not, well, a little bit from college football media, but from the national media, those people we don't consider colleagues and cohorts, because once again, we have fallen prey to the narrative that genius NFL head coach, guys, genius, is going to come in and provide a decided schematic advantage. Shout out to Charlie Weiss. Funny how this always happens with the Patriots staff. And we saw last night that Bill Belichick does not possess supernatural powers other than his ability to enter into relationships off the field. We could discuss that in another day. But it turns out North Carolina, kind of ass. Just kind of ass. Like, doesn't really matter. Turns out when your son with a dyed blonde faux hawk is standing on the field, just like sort of cycling through shocked expressions as TCU absolutely runs through him like poop through a goose. It turns out you can't automatically turn a decent-ish team. If anything, guys, let me stop myself. They looked worse than North Carolina did down the stretch last year. I don't know if you'd agree.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, just statistically, somebody sent me the note, or I saw the note somewhere where it was the worst loss, season opening loss, since in over 20 years or 22 years, maybe, or something like that.
Ross, I'm glad you asked about stats.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
The offense ran 49 plays last night for North Carolina. 8 of them ended in a TFL, which means, I don't know if this is good or not, because I'm not a football coach. I'm just a mere member of the demonized media. If 1 out of every 6 plays you call end up in negative yardage situations, that's probably not great. How about yardage, you ask? Thanks, Ross, for asking. 83-yard opening drive. By the way, I want to get on another soapbox. If you score in your opening possession, scripted offensive drive, all right, but you then suck so bad on the subsequent drives, I think that you should lose 2 points, all right? If you have, North Carolina opens the game, 83-yard scripted drive, scores a touchdown. Gio Lopez, look out, boys, here we come. You could see that TCU came out because of all of the nonsense, right? The depth chart stupidness, and we're going to be really clandestine about all this, you know, real NFL brain stuff that North Carolina started the game with. So TCU, Indianapolis, they came out, they played base, they kind of just reacted to what was happening. They saw some inside run, they saw a little outside, a little bit of play action. They go, okay, guess what? We can adjust to that. And adjust they did, boys, because after that 83-yard drive, North Carolina managed 36 yards until their second touchdown, which was basically the end of the third quarter, start of the fourth. They disappeared completely. I would like to talk about TCU as a positive. There's a lot of things that I thought TCU did really nice, and I thought, wow, this is a formidable team in the Big 12. I think they're definitely conference title contender worthy, all that kind of stuff. But we can, as long as you want, Andy, as the point guard of this program, just sit here and continue to talk about, hey, I tell you what, let's do this. 48-14, right? I'll take the two defensive touchdowns off the board. It's still 35-14, okay? Then I'll say, you know what? Steve Belichick, my guy with the faux hawk, I tell you what, I'll take the opening drive, the Kevorian Barnes touchdown that started the third quarter as Herb Street was saying, this is a really important drive for North Carolina. And then it was like a simple inside zone handoff to Barnes. And North Carolina just wasn't lined up for it. They couldn't match it. So he ran from scrimmage for a touchdown. I'll take that one off the board. You still lost by two touchdowns. This was domination in every way, shape, or form of an unprepared, mediocrely talented team.
And here's the thing. This is the part that makes this the most interesting, because what have we been told about North Carolina? And this is stuff, you know, we talk to some people around the sport. They didn't, and when I say they, I mean other people within the sport who don't work for North Carolina, they did not enjoy the insinuation that these geniuses were going to run all over these idiots, out-evaluate, out-scheme these idiots who are, you know, at the lower level of football. Jordan Dwyer. Did any of you know who Jordan Dwyer was before last night? Jordan Dwyer played at Idaho last season. He played for a coach named Jason Eck, who's now the coach at New Mexico. Jordan Dwyer was a really good receiver at Idaho last season. He was all Big Sky. Jordan Dwyer went in the transfer portal. Jordan Dwyer was in the transfer portal when Bill Belichick was the head coach of North Carolina. They could have gotten Jordan Dwyer.
Right.
They didn't. How could the geniuses at North Carolina have been out-evaluated by TCU? By mere mortals who coach college football?
There was a lot of acrimony. Yeah. I know our tongues are planted firmly in cheek as we sort of get through this bit. At least I'm enjoying the catharsis for, again, myriad reasons I won't mention. But there was a lot of, when you get into the anonymous scouting season, kind of like around spring ball, there was a lot of rolling of eyes, to Andy's point, at this idea that it wasn't so much the schematic part, like the old Charlie Weiss joke, but it really was this idea that Belichick and Mike Lombardi were going to come in and somehow, like through divination or something, see in the evaluation process on like second and third string, you know, defensive backs, something that the entirety of the sport could not. That's where I think the eye rolling really started. We've seen celebrity coaches come in. Ross, we talked about this with your profile on Rich Rodriguez. Names, however they've become celebrities in those particular places, are drawing money out in a way that is necessary right now in the player compensation era. I don't think that was the problem, although I would like, maybe if I was a North Carolina booster, to maybe check some receipts after last night.
They should have thrown some money at Jordan Dwyer or someone like that in the transfer portal, because they clearly didn't do very well in the portal. Like,
Andy, they got
50 people, right?
They spent all offseason telling us that the most important acquisition was the head coach. This kind of monoculture that Belichick breeds was why the NFL passed on him. This is why
Why is Matt Patricia a genius, former Belichick assistant Matt Patricia? Yeah. Why is he a genius today and Bill Belichick is getting lampooned? Because Matt Patricia has Caleb Downs.
Jimmy's and Joe's.
And 10 other guys just like him.
Yes. Look, there's a
Players
reason.
Players matter, don't they?
That franchises that were struggling in the NFL consistently historically, the Jaguars, the Falcons, a lot of these teams that passed on going the distance with Belichick, they did it for a reason. They did it because he's trying to enact or hold a culture that isn't just really, it doesn't exist anymore in the pro level. And when you get to the collegiate level, it's completely different. It's almost inapplicable. So I'm just fascinated that we spent all offseason kind of, I felt like we all sort of nodded patiently and did the bit, and here comes this NFL guy. And I mean, if for no other reason, strip the Super Bowl stuff off of him, NFL coaches don't have a dominant, successful history transitioning down in that later phase of their career. And it doesn't mean they're bad coaches. It's just a different sport.
Yeah. A different sport. And I mean, I think we're starting to learn a more difficult sport. I mean, you have younger players. You have to recruit, which is different now, obviously, with the compensation stuff. But I think it's still, you know, when you talk to coaches who spent time in the NFL and spent time in college, it's pretty clear what the more difficult job is. It's college coaching because of the more the year-round sort of recruiting and teaching players and developing very young players. I think in general, it's more difficult. And, you know, I think we talked about this last week. Nobody sort of knew how this was going to go with North Carolina because they had 70 new players. Belichick's access, you know, media access was pretty low, obviously, like it often is in the spring and in the fall and over the summer. So nobody really knew. But, I mean, that was so much worse than I ever could have imagined. I mean, they were so much worse than I ever could have imagined. And I didn't get to watch a lot of the game, but because I may or may not have been at MetLife Stadium watching the 90s band Oasis put on quite a show. But I was checking my phone, and so 7-0 became 20-7, and then I looked down, and I think it was like, whatever, 41-7, and I was just like in shock.
You didn't look back in anger, is what we're getting at. Andy, how much do we want to talk about TCU here? Again, no offense to Sonny Dyke or anybody involved. I can spend the whole segment dunking on Carolina, but I do feel like, wow, this is a step up.
I think Sonny Dykes and TCU deserve some credit here. And also, I imagine that was fairly cathartic for Sonny Dykes.
Yes, sir.
Because he was the victim in Deion Sanders' first Colorado game. Remember, Colorado goes down to TCU. TCU's coming off playing in the national title game. They've lost most of their best players. Their roster is pretty depleted, and they end up giving up 45 points to Colorado, lose a 45-42 game, and it was just a coronation of Deion Sanders, who, by the way, also comes out of last night looking pretty freaking phenomenal. If we're gonna talk about celebrity head coaches, because he took over a team that went 1-11.
Yeah.
Made them better immediately, and then made them a lot better in year two and had a guy win the Heisman Trophy.
Personnel. He came from Jackson State, was considered a celebrity afterthought and a joke. But what was funny to me was I was having a conversation this morning about this. That game, we have a hindsight problem with Deion. We talked about this on previous shows. The Deion media spectacle kind of mounts in like week 3 or 4 of that season. We ascend that ladder. We came in last night, and look,
at an 11, Nick Saban's on the field. And
guys, Andy, the Monday Night Countdown crew and ESPN, this is probably one of the bigger faux pas I've seen from ESPN in a while, because they went out at upfronts this year and went on the record talking about, we want to chase Belichick because we don't feel like we did that as effectively with Deion. We feel like, I sat through a presentation one time from the stats department at ESPN. I sat through a presentation that was at a grad student lecture a couple years ago. And they talked about how we can see this aberration of rating, television ratings with Deion. We can't explain it. We know that it's coming from outside of traditional viewership circles. We know that it's a larger minority audience and it's a younger audience, and they're showing up for Deion and they're not sticking around or showing up early. They want Deion. It's kind of like the Taylor Swift effect in the NFL. ESPN thought, I guess, that an NFL audience would graft on, or they could somehow boost this or control this. But these are two wildly different circumstances. They just happen to have celebrity names. What did Deion have? He had Shador. He also had the best player in the country.
Experience. Yeah.
Yes, he came from Jackson State. And I know people out there, if you're listening to this, are going to go, Bill Belichick's won 90 Super Bowls. Guys, it's a different sport. He had a better handle on personnel in his first offseason leading into Colorado than Belichick clearly has at North Carolina.
Yeah, this North Carolina team went 6-6 last year. You know, in the spring, they immediately lose their best edge rusher. He went to Ohio State. Like, how nice would it be to have Bo Atkinson on that team last night? Maybe he gets Josh Hoover on the ground instead of Josh Hoover being able to carve them up. You know, that's the stuff that matters. And, you know, I'm not going to make fun of the blank depth chart because Shane Beamer did the same thing the day before for South Carolina. And Shane Beamer is definitely an experienced college coach. But the caginess with which they've handled everything, the standoffishness. I got a text from somebody in the local media in the Triangle last week said, you know, Belichick hasn't publicly gone after media, but he sent his NFL goon at a couple of local guys, is what the person told me. And my immediate response is he's going to really regret that when TCU shoves it up his new, you know what. And because I had a feeling this was going to happen, because not to this degree. I thought they'd lose. I did not think they would get absolutely annihilated. But TCU, this is not that team that played Deion Sanders' first Colorado team. They have much more NFL talent on this roster than they had on that roster. North Carolina, on the other hand, doesn't have a lot of NFL talent. I thought Pete Thamel did a really good job. The one part of the pregame show that really hit was Pete Thamel pops up and he goes, there's maybe two guys on this team that could get drafted right now in the next draft. Talking about North Carolina. And he nailed it.
Is that the fault of North Carolina in one offseason? Is that the standard we're creating now in the post-portal, post-NIL era? I don't know if we're necessarily expecting Ohio State's roster in year one, but they looked worse than last year.
How did they fail at the portal so badly?
Yeah, let me give both of you this hypothetical, and you tell me the answer to this. So if Bubba Cunningham, their athletic director, had been allowed to make the hire, you're probably talking about John Sumrall being North Carolina's head coach right now. Yes. John Sumrall is currently Tulane's coach. He was Troy's coach before that. He won two Sun Belt titles at Troy. He went to the American Championship game for Tulane in his first year.
And they're just beat
probably
going to
win the American
him
this
into
year.
The, yeah, pounding them into the turf.
Yeah.
Yes, and use the media in that win perfectly. Like teach tape on how to use the media with Katrina.
Yeah.
So if John Sumrall is North Carolina's head coach, hired the same day as Bill Belichick, what does that game look like last night?
I can answer to a degree because we saw those Tulane teams almost immediately graft on that physical attitude of Troy. The defensive starters, there's a chunk of defensive starters that went with him in year one. They ran the ball better. They adapted faster. So I guess, to your point, Andy, I think schematically they would have looked very different, but I do think they would have been more talented, and I don't want to use like a trope here, but they would have looked more
cohesive.
They
also have Darian Mensah as their quarterback instead of Duke having Darian Mensah as their quarterback.
Yeah, that's a big change too. Yeah.
Just a bit. That would have helped. It was shocking in every way. Shout out to that, talking about, I mentioned Teach Tate, like, Bud Clark, that pick six, that's about as clinical as it gets. You drop back, you bait a confused quarterback for a second, then you get the first step, you time it perfectly. There was a lot of that last night that just made North Carolina, look, turnovers happen, turnovers for scores happen. It was the frequency with which they occurred, and again, that sort of like vanilla, hapless sort of look that they had on the field for the supposed greatest football coach in the world. That's where we get to kind of feast now after listening to this.
Well,
for nine months.
That's the thing. Like, you're supposed to be the greatest in the world. You are the one trumpeting your staff. No one in college football is really thinking your staff's all that great. But you're watching them after the initial drive, which was scripted. TCU had no film on it. You don't even know what defense to put out there. Immediately, they go to the sideline and know exactly which gaps to fit. Immediately.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, Avalos did
it. It never worked again.
That.
And you're watching it and going, this is the best you could come up with. You had 9 months, and this is the best you could come up with.
Also, did they pick the wrong quarterback to start the game? Did they? I mean, what was this quarterback competition like? I mean, I just wonder why they decided to go with Geo instead of Max.
I had to be mobility.
Well, because they paid Geo in the portal.
Well, my guess is mobility. I don't have a good answer for you, Ross, because Johnson came in. Now, granted, the circumstances with which Johnson comes into the game is everything's gone to hell,
right?
You can calm down a little bit. you're not under the same pressure, but he was more effective throwing the ball. He leads the long scoring drive that puts him back in. Clearly better by comparison. I don't know if long-term he was the solution they want in terms of his skill set. I'm grasping here, to be honest with you, because it definitely looked like they had the wrong guy. Shocking that Belichick would make, again, that kind of evaluation error. The genius.
Mm. Well, I mean, it's not that there was only one quarterback who really did well with him. Oh, wait. There was.
Go Bucks.
All right, enough of this.
Mac Jones went 15th overall.
Yeah.
By the way, I wonder how all these people feel that. Remember from my story last week about all the university, the chancellor of the university, mm-hmm. saying yeah. that
Cokie's kid.
That already
Cokie.
This has been a success because they've got all this money, this new donations, all these season ticket sales. I wonder how these people feel who, well, one hired him. Right. The chancellor. Mm-hmm. How does he feel? How does other people on the board feel now after game one? Is the money really that worth it if you're going to put it on a performance like that? And number two, the money people, how do they feel? Right. They're spending all this money.
And they made an end run around their own AD. Yeah. They made an end run around their own AD, took over the process. But here's the thing. I will take a step back because I feel like we are dunking a little too gleefully here. They also might get better. It might be that this is them kind of feeling things out. The team will get better. They'll get better when they have a full cycle to evaluate and know what they want to get in the portal, know what they are. But I'm guessing, just having covered a lot of college football, that what actually happens is they go through this season, realize they don't have the staff they need. They revamp the staff. And it takes another year with the revamped staff to figure out what you need personnel wise. And so, and Bill Belichick's 73.
How long
do we have time for all this?
Right. How long is he going to do this? I mean, the thought was that this is supposed to be, as any program in college athletic or college football nowadays, it seems to be like instead of like the old days, you got till year four, right? It's like you got till year two, maybe. I mean, everybody wants this immediate turnaround. This does not look like. Based on the talent or lack of talent that they got in the portal, this does not look like any swift turnaround.
They have a nice little on-ramp before Clemson on October 4th. They're at Charlotte. They have Richmond. They have a year one UCF team that didn't look great in their opener. I think that they will, I mean, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. I think they will look at least a little bit more composed when they go and probably lose to Clemson. And then after that, you know, we're not going to pay... Here's the nice thing, honestly, as media, we don't have to treat this like Colorado. We don't like this. They can kind of fall back now and become a B or a C level story for the at least on the national level. They're not going to beat Clemson. They're not going to make some surprise run in the ACC. There are far better teams. And I'll try and create a transition as well as Andy does. Florida State and Miami both looked extremely good. Right. We still have SMU to talk about. We still have Clemson to talk about. This league doesn't have space for North Carolina. North Carolina is not ready for it at the top. So we don't have to bother with this week to week like we did.
Yeah.
Maybe with like, you know, the Dion hype of like, could they go undefeated? You know, that was a thing for a while.
Right. No, does it look like this team will pick up the momentum that where they could have championship aspirations, especially Godfrey, like you said, what we saw in Tallahassee and down in Miami.
That. Is how you do a transition there, Ross.
Yeah,
that's
there you go. There you go. South
that's
Florida.
That's beautiful. Good. I love it.
That was
I love
good.
It.
To South Florida.
It was a lob. I tried.
Thank you, Godfrey.
It's perfect. We'll be right back, and we will go to South Florida, where Ross watched a very fun week one game between Notre Dame and Miami. What does it mean for the U, and what does it mean for the Irish? Talk about it when we come back. Welcome back to the College Football Inquirer. Let us now, as Ross blearily talks to us from home, because he's been to New York and South Florida and Columbus, Ohio since the weekend started. Let's dive into your trip to South Florida, though.
Yeah.
Notre Dame and Miami, one of the most anticipated games of the offseason. lived up to the billing, looked like a primo heavyweight fight, dudes trading haymakers. Carson Beck, the veteran quarterback, CJ Carr, the first time starter. Miami comes out with a 3-point win. And I got to say, Ross, this game made me feel differently about Mario Cristobal, because all of the things that we used to crush him for, the game management stuff,
yeah,
he had it buttoned up.
That was last week.
He got it right this time.
We were dunking on him last week, like daily. just so we're clear.
Well, there are a couple of things, right? Let's talk about the issues, which weren't very many, but the issues Miami had, which really the two that stuck out is obviously late in the game, I think maybe late third quarter or so, or fourth quarter, they had that huge coverage bust on the tight end, gave up a 70-yarder that let Notre Dame sort of tie the game. And then there was a botched field goal snap. I mean, it was pouring rain and it was nasty out and all that. But other than those two plays, Miami played really good football. And they controlled the line of scrimmage. And Carson Beck had receivers who, unlike at Georgia, who could catch, it seems, and who could get open. That was impressive. And, man, Miami's got a couple of defensive linemen. And, oh, boy, we're going to be hearing their name, as we did some last season, but a lot this year. So it was an impressive all around. I think folks on the team, just talking to them sort of after the game, they highlighted the busted coverage and the botched snap on the field goal. But they felt like everything else went about as well as it could. And it was impressive.
Ross, I'll go a step and say that those don't count, because those are both, well, weather related. It looked gross. I assume it was just sort of gross as that rain was coming through with the heat.
It was bad.
It's natural. I've been to that stadium. It's natural turf, right? It's like it happens in weather. It's not something that I don't think that's like a poor coaching moment. I think it's just circumstantial. And then as far as sometimes guys don't run the way they're supposed to. Sometimes guys don't cover the way they're supposed to. Shout out to Dan Lanning for applauding one of his receivers blocking through the end zone. He said, hey, he was blocking the wrong guy, but he blocked the hell out of him. These are kids. I'm not holding that kind of stuff against Mario Cristobal. It's, again, the Georgia Techness of it all, and we didn't see that. It was a close game. To Andy's point, it was very well managed. So for 1 week, I will withdraw any criticism. I still feel like he's got one in him. I don't know if the apparatus has changed overall, but I would like to say this was the weekend of defensive linemen. This was, if we wanted to set tone and tenor for the 25 season, between Clemson, between LSU, between Miami, both Ohio State and Texas, this was a weekend that felt defined less by quarterback player superstars and more about the pressure generated up front on a largely emerging crop of quarterbacks. It was nice. It was low scoring. Again, it was reasonable. I don't know if there's like a stat someone can pull on this, guys, but this just felt like all the marquee games were lower scoring than they have been for the last 5, 6, maybe even 10 years. And I think that's most of that is a byproduct of the fact that we had a lot of young guys under center.
I was about to say, young quarterbacks, first time starters. Yeah. There felt like a lot of that. I mean, we saw that obviously, in Miami. I mean, one of the issues with Notre Dame and the way they played, I think, was because of the maybe lack of trust they have in their first-time starter. We saw that quite a bit. I mean, they threw a lot of screen passes, CJ Carr.
Yeah.
They just didn't – it was pretty clear they didn't have a whole lot of faith in him going down the field unless they really needed, were forced to go down the field as they were late in the game. And actually – he had made some things happen, right? He had a pretty brilliant play where he spun out of like two sacks and then found a receiver open in the end zone to keep them alive for a touchdown. But it was pretty obvious that they didn't have a ton of trust in him going deep. And he struggled at times. There's no doubt. You're on the road. It's loud. By the way, we had a few veteran Miami, University of Miami beat writers in the press box, and they kind of looked around and they were just shocked at kickoff, because it was
really
wall to wall. I mean, every seat was filled, and they were talking about how that was such a rarity.
I've done two Miami home games in my career, and loud would not be a descriptor I would use at Hard Rock Stadium, at least for a regular Miami home game.
It was 80 degrees at kickoff. 90% humidity, and it was raining. It was just, it really was. It did feel like you were just like tossed into a soup out there in the stadium. I mean, it was incredible.
Price and Love, 78 yards rushing. If you're gonna not trust your quarterback for understandable reasons or want to ease him in, you'd like that number to be bigger. That's pretty much what happened.
Four carries for Love in the first half, right? They finally sort of got him going in the second half. And I don't know if that was, I didn't catch it live, Andy, Godfrey, y'all might have on the TV, but like, I am assuming they didn't run him a lot in the first half because Miami was sort of loading the box because they were playing a first-year starting quarterback on the road, and I assume they were going to outnumber them, and so that's part of why they didn't run him. I don't know.
Part of it, but maybe also you have one of the best offensive lines in college football. Notice I didn't say the best like I've been saying all offseason because I think they might not have been the best offensive line on the field that day. Miami's was excellent.
Yeah.
But you've got that group. You've got Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price. You got to try it more. You just do. I don't care what Miami's doing. Like, if you're that good, you should be able to gain yards anyway. And I think they probably regret not giving it to Love more often. I actually thought CJ Carr looked all right, given the circumstances. It's a tough deal for your first start. And I think he's going to get better. He made a pretty big mistake there at the end, trying to throw the ball away. And it ends up being an intentional grab. I guess it would have been a sack anyway. But he did the best he could under circumstances. The guy I came away completely impressed with was Reuben Bain, who we knew was good. Oof. This is a Miami defensive end. He's a junior. He was awesome as a freshman. He got hurt in the Florida game last year, the season opener, and I don't know if he ever was fully healthy. So we never got to see him at full power, I think, last year. And he was, I mean, he just wrecked the whole thing at the end. And that Miami defense, completely night and day different than the one that essentially wasted Cam Ward the year before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they changed coordinators. They hired Corey Heatherman from Minnesota. They do a radical revamp of the secondary through the transfer portal. They already had good defensive linemen. Those guys, you know, Bain was there, Akeem Mesidor was there. But Ross, did they look as fast and as swarming in person as it looked on TV?
Yeah, you know, especially against a Notre Dame front that, like you said, was, you know, supposed to be one of the best sort of in the country. You know, the tip pick, the tipped kick, interception pick, whatever you want to call it,
right?
That Bain had. So we were all in the press box, and obviously, and you know, he intercepts the pass, and a sports writer next to me was like, "What was he doing on the perimeter?" And I was like, "Well, I think he ran out there and ran under the ball. Surely not, right? That a 270-pound defensive end could get out there that quickly." So they showed the replay, and lo and behold, of course, right? He wasn't on the perimeter. He just, as soon as the ball was tipped in the air, he started heading that way. He got there so quickly that when it was kicked, he got right under it. It was just, it was one of those incredibly athletic
Ross,
plays
you went,
that you're sure to shake your head at.
You went and saw Oasis. I'm a sucker for 90s. No, let me, like, this is 90s nostalgia. I've been burned by doing this before, by hyping this up, okay?
Mm.
But I really like the defensive adjustments from both of these programs. We talked about October 4th earlier at the Clemson-North Carolina game, which won't be much, we think. This Florida State-Miami game. I've done this before after week one, y'all. I've done this before. Mm. Both DCs coming in from the Big Ten. Both of them, to Andy's point, taking, you know, they did work in the offseason, but a lot of this was like, let's make existing talent better and make them look like, hey, these are two of the three biggest programs in the state of Florida. Sorry, UCF. And it's working so far. It worked in high-profile situations against talented opponents. I know we have a month before this game happens, but wouldn't it be nice? Oasis is selling out stadiums. They're back together. They might even be writing new music. I don't know. Wouldn't it be nice if we had the one of the pinnacle 90s games dominate? Dominate the way it used to?
Yeah.
Godfrey, let's set the table. Let's remember there's an appetizer here. Okay. Miami and Florida play.
Florida play
in week four.
Yeah. 2 weeks before that, I think. Yeah.
And then a couple weeks later, Miami and Florida State play. And obviously, Florida and Florida State will play at the end of the season. So, like, a for real state championship can happen this year. And my 90s kid nostalgia as someone who grew up in the state of Florida. So I moved from South Carolina to Florida in 1985. I'm 7 years old. Miami is already hitting. Bowden's really got Florida State humming. They're about to go on a streak of from 1987 to 2000, where they finished in the top four of the AP poll every single year. Steve Spurrier is going to be at Florida in 1990. So my high school, middle school experience was just those three teams dominating,
being absolutely awesome.
And me as a South Carolina fan who didn't have a rooting interest in any of them, just watching all my friends yell at each other. The trash that gets talked between these three fan bases when they're good is epic. It is legendary. And I am so excited at the thought they might all three be good in the same year again. It would be incredible.
What it would. We're going to learn a lot about, like, Florida goes to LSU in a couple of weeks, right? Or a week before they then play.
Week from Saturday.
At Miami.
Yeah.
Right. Don't they play? They go that down there. So yeah, because they return the favor.
So it's almost like Florida's got a pretty hard schedule, but hey, if you want to win a national title, you got to get through some tough games. So that is it's going to be so much fun. Miami, you know, Miami's offense. I do wonder if like the Cam Ward offense got to play with this defense. Yeah. I'm not sure that would be fair, but I'm really glad Miami fixed the defense because I think Carson Beck's going to be fine with that offense. Malachi Toney. We got introduced to him.
I meant to talk about him a little bit. Yeah, they call him Baby Jesus, and I mean the guy just like gets
that's
open.
A South Florida nickname, if ever there was one.
Yeah, I know, hey, kid from Fort Lauderdale. I was reading old stories from him. I guess his team won the state championship this past year.
Yeah,
and
American Heritage.
His high school coach gave an interview after the game, and he said, they call him Baby Jesus, and I told the kids, there ain't no way I'm calling a kid Baby Jesus. Well, he was a receiver. Obviously, he's a receiver, but they put him at quarterback for that championship game because their quarterback was hurt. He, like, started the game 15 of 15, hadn't been quarterback all year, threw for, like, 200 yards, three touchdowns, ran all over the field. So the high school coach after the game said, you know what? I'm going to call him Baby Jesus. He was Baby Jesus Baby tonight. Jesus. And so we saw Baby Jesus kind of come onto the stage. Cristobal said he was trying to, like, keep him a secret. Every time we looked up, he was open. I think he caught six or seven passes. He was open every time. And what a weapon.
Carson. Yeah, he was not a secret. The Miami message boards were buzzing about him all offseason.
And CJ Daniels, how about that catch, too? Unbelievable.
Woo! Yeah.
Like, the opposite of the Georgia receivers. Stop. We saw 36 drops, I think, last year, Carson Beck. Georgia receivers had the most in the country, 36 drops. I think there were zero on Sunday night in Miami.
A lot of people listening, not from the South, I just want to point something out. When a football player is nicknamed Jesus, he's the last one you want to fight. That's just how it works.
Oh, 100%.
That's just how it works. Yeah.
100%.
I know it doesn't make sense. And I know that feels incongruent.
The thing you have to understand is, as Ross's story points out, they're not taking calling him Baby Jesus lightly. Like, you got to earn
right.
that.
Yeah, that's a big name.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I never actually found out, tremendous. Like, why. And there was a whole thing. I love the Miami people. They're all great to work with. But the elevator in the press box broke as the game was
ending. Oh, no.
Oh, nice. Let's cause a little. We had to go all the way around the stadium to get down as a whole thing. Anyway, but they did get it fixed. They did get it fixed a little bit later. But I was trying to get down there to get some players to talk about, like, why is he called Baby Jesus? What's the deal there? But I was able to find. I think he had a TikTok or Instagram, and that's his name on there. So I'm guessing one thing led to another. He's really good at football, and they were just like, "Hey, Baby Jesus." So, but the point is, Carson Beck has plenty of options. He was mostly on target, and the ones he wasn't on target with, he threw it a place that where it wouldn't be intercepted and where his receivers could make a play on the ball, just like CJ Daniels' one-handed catch, which was just absurd.
Calling that
at
making
the goal line.
A play on the ball is like calling the birth of man a little doodle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Andy, go ahead and set a deadline for me, okay? When do I get to start the I'm gonna home cook a narrative here that Carson Beck is in a better place with a smarter and more progressive offensive scheme. Is it Georgia struggling at Tennessee? Can I start it then? Like how many weeks do, like, I don't want to overreact to week one here. Yeah.
Oh, you
like this, what do listen. I need from Georgia to start this?
Georgia fans want nothing more than to be able to complain about Mike Bobo.
Right.
And this is giving them
ultimate
license to complain about Mike Bobo. So if Georgia struggles against Tennessee, which we don't know if they're going to, but if they did, I think that would be okay. By the way, we said the segments in this show will come organically. You ready? You ready?
Ready.
You ready?
Yeah.
Godfrey's home cooked narratives.
There we go.
I like it.
It's like a Campbell Soup can logo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Or, you know, maybe they lose to Hugh Freeze.
Godfrey's narrative stew.
There you go. Narrative stew. Chunky. Just throwing it out there. They could lose at Auburn. Just throwing it out there.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Oh, did we even talk about Auburn the other day? Because it was a Friday night game.
You got a little victory lap in. But by all means, I mean, feel free. You did identify it for no reason whatsoever. It is very delightful and satisfying for all of us to make fun of Hugh Freeze. But they got better. They got X's. That's the theme of today. There you go. Is personnel wise, we want to go back to Belichick for a second.
Yeah.
Hugh Freeze, for as hapless a wit as he is, figured out he needed better football players, and Auburn did that this offseason.
Well, and also did not make the same mistakes he made last year. Like, a lot of the discussion with Hugh Freeze last year was, well, I mean, we run these RPOs. I guess I could call more plays that are just runs, but we run these RPOs. Okay. Well, the other night, you know what he did? He said, we're running the ball.
Just running the ball.
Yeah.
Because it's working. Because we're averaging 6 yards a carry.
A few power, right? QB power. That I think we saw a few of those with Jackson Arnold. That's what, you know, that's what sort of like plagued, right, Auburn the last couple of years outside of defensive blown leads last year, which like three or four.
Well, the blown
games,
leads tended to come when the quarterback would throw a pick six.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those weren't good. Yeah. They were just like a three and outs, and for sure. They just the bugaboo, man. They needed a quarterback. They needed a quarterback that you know he could work with, I guess. You know, there was a lot made. I think it was it last year that wasn't it Bo Nix who chimed in on social about Hugh because he was criticizing the quarterback. Remember all
it was
that?
Bo Wallace. It was former Ole Miss quarterback Bo Wallace.
Nix.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Bo Wallace, who chimed in, and that was a lot of drama. And I don't know, you know, I mean, the point is that they seem to have a quarterback that sort of more fits what Hugh does, and that could be dangerous.
I like it. No one else is dangerous ranking football teams early in the season because you're going to be wrong. Mm. That's just how it goes. Ross ranked his, got roundly criticized. Well, now everybody else has jumped in because the AP poll is out. As we're recording this, it just came out. We'll discuss it when we return. We are back on the College Football Inquirer, and Ross, you put your top 10 out on Sunday, or was it Monday? It was Monday. You made some people mad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You had LSU number one. I didn't have a problem with that. I think the Ohio State folks did, but I did. If you wanted to make Ohio State or LSU number one, both of them had great wins. One was on the road, one was at home, but I'm not going to quibble with either one.
Yeah. Here's the thing, right? Polls in general are silly. Certainly, preseason polls are very silly. Week one polls are also pretty silly. So this all is just a conversation because this is what we do, right? But it's all fairly ridiculous because we're judging off of 1 week. And as we know, and we've talked about plenty on the show, with the transfer portal and the player movement, I mean, this early in the season or preseason, like, do we really know enough about these teams?
No. But
of course
it's
we
fun
don't,
to talk
right?
about. And
but
people
it is
like
fun.
Things yes. ranked in order.
They love the rankings, Andy. Yes.
They know.
And here's the thing.
Numbered grid.
There's a couple ways to do it.
Yeah.
You can keep your preseason assumptions and let them last into the season. So I thought, you know, so-and-so was good and they lost, so I'm going to keep them up high because I still think they're good. They could be good. Or you could do what Ross does, and this is what I did when I voted in the AP poll for 5 years. You just use the results from the season, which in the first few weeks, it will vary wildly, and people will be like, what are you doing? And then by the end of the season, everybody's rankings all look the same. The more data you get, the more same it gets. But I love that because, you know, you bumped Florida State way up. You moved LSU to number one. Like, I have no problem with that. I'm looking to see, did the voters still rank Alabama? Yes, they did. 21.
Of course they
Alabama
did.
Still ranked.
Still
ladies and gentlemen,
around.
Nothing you saw on Saturday suggests Alabama should be ranked. Not a thing.
No, definitely not.
Ross, or
well, yeah,
Andy,
that's right.
If we used your logic, which I love, by the way, because it does create for some amazing top tens, how would you have like South Florida in your top 10 right now?
No,
if you just didn't
think Boise State's that good.
Okay. All right. I'm trying to find the aberration.
Remember, you're assuming Boise State was good and I'm not.
Oh, so I'm still falling prey to informing it by the previous season. Okay. All right.
But we kind of have to do that.
Well, my my top 10, because I had, you know, like I had Utah and Auburn in my top 10, you know, because
Utah's again, awesome. I had them in my projected bracket, my bracketology.
I mean, it's, you know, they pounded UCLA and obviously Auburn went on the road against Baylor and, you know, so it's tough. I mean, you're using, you know, one game sample, right? And these like the Georgia fans and stuff, right, are just like hammering me, and I'm just like trying to get them to read a paragraph leading into the top 10 explaining that, you know, if you play a lower level school, there's
they just look at the graphic,
The rankings. I know, I just the ranking. What's funny is like fans sort of like pile on the media for the preseason polls because usually they're like all wrong, right? And they criticize, and a lot of fans think we should not have preseason polls, right? We saw the Big 12 scratch their preseason sort of media poll. Like a lot of fans sort of think we shouldn't have preseason polls. And here I am doing a ranking, right? Not using preseason, and they're angry at that too. So it's damned
because
damned if you do.
They don't know what they actually want, and people like to complain. That's the deal. If there were no preseason polls, fans would be mad about that too, because they want that. You need something to chew on. And the fact of the matter is, if the AP didn't put out the poll, if the coaches poll didn't come out, we would all still put out polls, because guess what? People love to click on them and people love to talk about them. They do the two things we're always trying to get you to do. Click and interact.
That's right. If you don't want polls, stop clicking on them, because like the top 10 on Monday, my producer hasn't sent me the exact like numbers or whatever. I'm guessing it's going to be pretty significant. People freaking love silly, stupid, worthless polls. But here we are.
Just out here saying it's clickbait. Yes, we are. That's my favorite part is when you get accosted about it. They go, y'all are just making this up. And I'm like, that's literally the job. It's literally the job. Yeah. Surprise. It's a magic trick.
Also, we're all making up everything as college sports goes. I mean, like we talk about the off the field stuff in college sports right now. What do they call? They keep saying we're building the plane as we fly it. They're pretty much just making up as we go. They're making
making it up as they go on, which they always have been. They just are now actually admitting it, which is really funny.
But I would argue they're falling in real time. I don't even know if there's a plane anymore. I just think they're hoping to not crash land. Yeah. Still can't believe you put LSU number one.
Yeah, there you go. So let's get back to this. My thinking that though was, all right, first of all, I didn't have in my mind, I did not have Texas as high as some others because of the new faces on the offensive line and all that stuff. So let's start with that. But, you know, LSU had to travel. They're on the road. They're facing a Clemson team that I did have in my mind as, you know, my ACC championship sort of pick. They had an established quarterback, you know, and you got Ohio State is at home and they're playing a team with a first year starting quarterback. So I just sort of, it was, for me, it was that, but that seems to be the big argument in the polls is LSU versus Ohio State. And where I've seen polls with Ohio State, I've seen polls with LSU still see some holes with Penn State. But in my mind, it was the fact that they were playing a little more, you know, established program on the road. So there you go.
I was firmly joking, by the way, because I know a certain quotient of the audience will respond. No, it makes total sense to me. I think the road advantage, too, I think is a big part of it, went into, as we say, a hostile environment. No, I think it's great. I did laugh at a significant amount of LSU fans who felt very spooked by your poll, as if they're suddenly going to be noticed as if they weren't before. Yeah. So, shout out to my father-in-law. That was the first thing I woke up to on Sunday morning was, Yahoo number one LSU, take it down, as if, like, you know, as if it was some sort of state secret that was gonna go out. So
that's right.
You can tell there's a high level of confidence in Brian Kelly right now. They're really from a certain sample size of LSU fans, Blake Baker can do no wrong right now. Brian Kelly, jury's still out.
The thing I love about this, like, and the most depressing thing as a writer, is you can have these beautifully crafted stories where you've talked to 10 different people and you've just bled it out on the page, and it's a beautiful string of pearls that, you know, you've got a perfect lead and a perfect ending and the best quotes ever, and then you see the numbers and a ranking you did with an unexpected number one has like 10 times as many readers.
It's so
depressing.
Yep.
Or they take
long 3,000 word feature and you're beat by some 200 word ranking that you did in, like, you know, 30 minutes. Yeah.
Or they pull one quote out of the 3,000 word feature, which doesn't have the same context and attribution, runs on 11 other websites, and then
put on a headline.
Yeah, buddy.
Yes.
Yeah.
200 words. And then
love that.
And then Russ gets a call.
Yeah. Always. Yeah. And then the original source is like, what'd you do, man?
Wait. I thought you weren't going to make a big deal out of this. Oh, this seems inaccurate. Well,
point of this segment, kids, is that the American media is very healthy. It's in a great place. And we're going to keep putting numbers next to things until we're all dead, because that's what you want. Right. So eat up.
It is, though. I mean, like customer behavior is what it is. Like, we follow what you do, not what you tell us you want. It's all what you do.
We'll take it off the menu when you stop ordering it.
Andy, perfect. You know, like I said, I don't have like full numbers or click numbers, but I use Bitly, you know, which shortens the link of things, and you can track the Bitly clicks just on the link on Twitter that you put, and you can track that. So it's not overall numbers, but it's just the ones from Twitter specifically. In my Rich Rod story, right, what I spent literally like a week and a half, right, writing and reporting on, in my top 10, which I spent 45 minutes, maybe an hour, both have the same amount, basically, of 3,500 of Bitly clicks. So there you go. Good example.
Yeah. But that's the life we lead. It's sort of like making movies. You make the one for me, one for you. Like,
right.
The Rich Rod's your indie flick that you just pour your heart into.
That's the
rankings, your Marvel movie.
It's Jurassic Park.
You better get Fast and Furious there, buddy, every week. they want that in volume. And they want to be mad about it too. So don't make it accurate. Actually, throw South Florida in there next week, just for me.
Yeah, just throw it. Just what I thought about putting in the top 10 this week was like Iowa State, even Georgia Tech. I mean, I was thinking about throwing them in based on, you know, who they played.
Georgia Tech, nice bounce back after three turnovers in 8 minutes. Usually you lose when that happens. Yeah. So
I really, that is worth pointing out real fast to like get off the digression. Mm. That was maybe like, you can't call it a quality win when you make that many mistakes early on in the game, but they went on the road. All of the advanced stats, because of the turnovers, were basically saying, hey, they're dominating this game, and they still, that's the narrative that ends up, and you lost by a possession, right? You should have won that game. They ended up gutting it out. They're a better team than that result, I think, shows. I think they could also be really good. I don't know where they are in this ACC pecking order. We're kind of having a Big 12 moment in the ACC, it looks like, where you've got like 6-7 quality teams. We're not 100% sure if there's a dominant brand there. Also, when do they play Miami?
But they also have, at the top, some supremely talented teams that I think, like, the top of the Big 12 does not have that level of talent.
No.
The top of the ACC, especially if we're talking about Miami and Clemson and maybe Florida State, we'll see. But Miami and Clemson for sure have that level of talent. Ross, I do want to, you mentioned it earlier, but I want a review of this Oasis concert. And I want to tell you guys,
look at this set list.
Like, Oasis factors into me when I realize that I am actually an old person. And this happened a few years ago, and I was having a conversation with some coworkers, and they said Oasis was a one-hit wonder.
What?
And I was like, wait, which hit?
Like a five-hit like, wonder? Yeah.
They're like,
yeah.
Wonderwall, stupid.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait. Don't Look Back in Anger. You don't know Rock and Roll Star.
No.
You don't know Supersonic. Like, you don't know any of these songs?
So
they're like, I've only heard Wonderwall. I'm like, are you? And then my head almost exploded.
Ooh, 23 songs, Ross. I'm looking at your set list last
night.
Yeah,
it was long. They played for right at 2 hours. I think they took the stage around like 8:50, and they played basically to 11 o'clock. And it was great. They ended in an absolute flurry. The ending, I think, well, the very last song was Champagne Supernova, of course, Wonderwall.
Yeah. So you had a 4-song encore, if you don't remember. Yeah, you had Master Plan, which is like probably one of the favorite B-sides. And then there's an EP called Master Plan. I highly recommend it. Then Don't Look Back in Anger, Wonderwall, Champagne Supernova. Wonderwall. So they hit you with the uppercuts.
It was
at the
boom,
end.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, it got pretty crazy. And then right at the end of Champagne Supernova, they had, at least at MetLife Stadium, the one that I went to last night, was like an incredible fireworks show. It was like wild right at the end. And they stayed on the stage for it. So it was pretty good.
Awesome,
the opener was Cage the Elephant, who I didn't know, but really enjoyed. Actually, I didn't recognize the name, but enjoyed
good
and heard
early
a couple
2000s
of
alt rock band. Yeah.
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah. Kind of spiritual successors on the British level, but you got, I would deep ish cuts or more like fan favorites last night. You got Cigarettes and Alcohol.
Yeah, there were a few that I at least didn't recognize or hadn't heard in a long, long time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Acquiesce.
It was good. It was packed too. Wall to wall, man.
And no CEOs were caught on the Jumbotron with their co-worker side piece.
Not that I saw, no. But it was it was full, and like, you know, they had that was my first time in that stadium, which is so weird, right? Because the Jets and Giants both play there. So you had like the Ring of Honor of each. You know, on one side, Jets, one side, Giants. And I'm guessing the Giants open up the season there next week. I haven't looked at the NFL schedule, but I'm guessing they do, because all the Jets stuff was more prominent around the sort of outside the stadium and in the stadium. I'm guessing they change that over every week.
It's crazy. They also have
pull the cloth off of Michael Strahan and put it on Mark Gastineau. Is that how that works? Or?
Yeah.
And they have a neutral setting for when they host games. I covered a Super Bowl there. It's designed to be both like home fieldy, but then also immediately neutral because of all the variety of events they host. Yeah. So, yeah.
Also, couldn't have been like better weather. It was literally 70 degrees.
That's awesome.
Just a little breezy. I mean, it was an amazing night. They did a great job getting out of the stadium. Not as smoothly.
You're in a swamp in New Jersey. No matter how much they dress it up, you're in a swamp in New Jersey.
Had to get back to Manhattan over three bridges, a tunnel, you know, whatever else. Yeah, so that was fun. But
I'm glad you made it through the weekend, Ross. When you initially told me this travelogue, I guess it was back in Destin in May, you told me what you were planning, and I was like, I don't think you're going to survive that. So I am really happy to see you bright-eyed and bushy-tailed this afternoon.
I don't know if I'd say I'm bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I might take a nap here soon, but I made it. I survived. Survived, Andy.
Well, we've all survived another episode of the College Football Inquirer. I don't know if Bill Belichick's going to survive the season if he's got a few more games like that in him, but it is something we will keep track of. We will not follow it the way ESPN intended to follow Bill Belichick this season. I think, by the way, Godfrey, there's probably some meetings going on about that particular plan as we speak. But
maybe
we have so much to cover when we come back on Thursday. Michigan-Oklahoma is going to be a banger. And we talked a little bit about Bryce Underwood in the preseason, but I really want to delve down with these guys about Bryce Underwood, not just the quarterback, but Bryce Underwood, the brand, Bryce Underwood, the experience of this is the next level of NIL quarterback savior. We're going to see it. as he goes on his first road start against John Mateer,
mm-hmm.
who's your more conventional transfer portal quarterback savior.
A little tease, Andy, a little intriguing intriguing game for next week. Illinois at Duke.
Yes.
Duke
yes.
New quarterback Darian Mensah. A little tease to maybe a feature on Darian Mensah, who's got quite a story in his transfer from Tulane that we hope to tell later this week, and we'll certainly get to on the pod.
We are going.
We mentioned Idaho earlier in the show, by the way.
Yeah.
Before we go, I do want everybody to see this. So the Idaho Vandals, you know, excellent Big Sky football team. They are playing St. Thomas of Minnesota at the Kibbe Dome on Saturday. The Kibbe Dome, by the way, is a 17,000 seat dome in Moscow, Idaho. If you have not seen it, it is spectacular. But you know what else is spectacular? These helmets that have the word taters written in script, because what's more important than anything in Idaho? Potatoes.
Potatoes. That's right.
Every team should have a script helmet. That's my belief. Every team should have one. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be your primary, just one script helmet. It's distinctly college.
Go Taters.